This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. The online car resource Edmunds.com reports that car sales are up 14% since last year, a post-recession boom caused by more widely available credit, an increasingly aged fleet, and a host of new models. They say trucks are coming back and that fuel efficiency and safety are important to buyers.
If you were buying a car, shopping for a car, what would you look for out of a car?
Cost, gas efficiency, and nice style.
Repair record, reliability.
Basically, air conditioning and cruise control.
All the bells and whistles.
Safety.
Quality. Reliability.
Yeah.
Gas mileage.
The best bang for my buck.
Yeah, so people are looking for an awful lot. Those are some voices from West Hartford, collected by interns Corey Breen and Greg Dyson. So what are you looking for in a car? What are your experiences with buying or selling? You can join our conversation today, 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Email wherewelive at WNPR.org or tweet us at wherewelive. We're armed with more information about cars than ever before, but does this necessarily make us better car buyers? Coming up, we'll hear from Jim Motovalli from the New York Times Wheels blog and Car Talk. And we'll also talk to one of the guys who fixes your car when it's broken. But first, let me bring in Philip Reed, who's Senior Consumer Advice Editor at Edmunds.com. He joins us by phone. Philip, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
So how do you think the car industry is doing right now, first of all?
Well, sales are red hot, and it's been a long time since this has happened. Back in 2008, when credit, fell off the edge of a cliff, people stopped buying cars because they were so uncertain about the future. And at that time, everybody talked about what they called a pent-up demand. There was a big demand for cars that was unmet. It appears that pent-up demand is finally being released, and people are buying cars. They're also leasing cars at record numbers.
So leasing cars and buying cars, I want to ask about the super low interest rates first. Why do we keep seeing these 0% deals all of a sudden?
Well, of course, there's been a lot of concern from Washington to kickstart the economy. And, one of the best ways to do that is to make money widely available. The other thing was that credit nearly dried up during the recession, and it had an immediate impact on the car business. There's a lot of statistics about how most of the people that do buy cars or lease cars, which requires good credit too, of course, they need access to good credit. And when it's not available, they just wait and they don't buy cars.
What about leasing? A lot of people lease, and you see these deals all over the place. Of course, you have to read the fine print. I mean, the number that you might pay a month isn't exactly what it's costing you, but is leasing becoming more popular as well?
Well, it's at pretty much of an all-time high, which means that it's at about 25%. So that means about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 people that go into a dealership to get a car wind up leasing. And as you mentioned, the advertised lease payments are extremely attractive looking. But as you indicated, the fine print is where the story is told. But still, leasing can be an extremely good deal. In fact, I've dissected leases and looked at them, and in some cases you kind of shake your head and say, wow, I'm not sure how they got to that number. However, for the manufacturer, leasing is a very important tool. And what they do is they look at the big picture. So they take the car back in and they sell it as a good used car. And in the big picture, they do make money. On the front end, you get a new car that you can get for very low payments. Very quickly, I just I worked with a New York Times blogger who put out a story about the true expense of leasing and got more comments than she had ever gotten before on her column. So it's actually a very, not exactly controversial, but people have very strong feelings about those two things, buying and leasing.
Well, a lot of people look to Edmunds for consumer advice. What are some things that they should be looking for if they're thinking about leasing a car? Obviously, there's that initial down payment, sometimes $2,500 more down to get that very, very low monthly payment. What are some things people should be looking out for, questions they should be asking?
Well, first of all, on our site, we have an area called incentives and rebates. And as part of that, lease specials are a big incentive. When a lease is incentivized, they basically tweak the formula to get to a very low monthly payment, because monthly payment is, basically what it's all about. But the things that you need to hang on to in a lease is you need to make sure that it includes 12,000 miles. That's sort of the standard. Make sure that that's enough for you. You basically can set the down payment, or what they call actually drive-off fees. You also should hold on to the term. Generally, we think that either two-year or three-year leases are good for the consumer. Don't go above 3 years because then you'll be outside of the extended warranty. Then the last thing you look at, of course, is the monthly payment. Very often, the quoted monthly payment does not include sales tax and registry fees, which are naturally going to bump it up somewhat. In most states, that would be roughly 10%. So when you're looking at that low payment, you know, factor in another 10% plus factor in whatever the down payment is. We tell people that about $1,000 is a good amount for drive-off fees. You want to keep the cash in your pocket. That's why you're leasing. You're not buying. And so don't make a huge down payment. You're also maybe at risk at losing that down payment if you total the car in the first couple of months.
Oh, well, I mean, we don't want to have that happen. Philip Reed is here. He's Senior Consumer Advice Editor at Edmunds.com. He joins us on the phone today, and we're going to take some of your calls and questions as we consider the scary and sometimes fun world of buying a car. 860-275-7266. Charlie's in Coventry. Hi, Charlie. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm just calling to say that I've been, you know, about two cars in the past 3 years, and I've noticed that the atmosphere has changed in dealerships. I mean, aside from the no-haggling dealerships, which for me isn't, that's not how you buy a car. You gotta haggle, you gotta get that price down to lowest bid. And also, I noticed about in the past 15 years, there's no more hot dogs, there's no more popcorn, there's no more goodies for people coming in. I think that this may be something happening that we're seeing. Dealerships invest less money in that atmosphere.
Well, I think you raised some good points, Charlie. And Philip Reed, you have a real firsthand look at this. You spent 3 months undercover as a car salesman back in 2000. You've been writing with updates on this recently. Maybe you can talk about how the atmosphere has changed around buying a new car these days.
That's a really, really good question. There's a lot of discussion about that. And to some degree, it's a little hard to gauge because, you know, you have to understand that a lot of people that run the car dealerships were very set in their ways before the Internet arrived. So that to some degree, there's a tendency to want to go back to the standard model of car buying. Meanwhile, consumers are really demanding a different experience. At Edmunds.com, we have a new tool called Price Promise, which is actually an upfront stated price that you can get without going to a dealership. You can print out a voucher and take it in. We recommend that you call before you go to the dealership, and that price is the price. Also, your caller mentioned no haggle pricing. There's, of course, Saturn tried that. Saturn went out of business, not necessarily because of the no haggle. People really loved that. It was more the product. Of course, there was such a big shakeup. A lot of car manufacturers went out of business. But really, the biggest tool that consumers have now is the Internet department. And every dealership has an Internet department. They don't widely publicize it because they would really rather you came in, got the free popcorn, did the dance, which is so difficult for most consumers, which is face-to-face negotiation with a car salesman.
Well, and that face-to-face negotiation has changed. I mean, the thing about the Internet pricing is all of these dealers seem to be competing with each other, not just in the local area, but all over the world. You see these prices and you know what they are. You also have things like Carfax. You can come in with information on the car. It seems, Philip, as though the consumer is armed with more information when he or she walks into the dealer than ever before. Do you think that that is making for a better consumer relationship, a better outcome for someone trying to buy a car, or do you think it's still going to end up in favor of the people who are trying to sell the car?
You know, you're asking an excellent question that has several pieces to it. The outcome of it usually is better for the consumer. What I'd like to focus on is your feeling of comfort during the transaction. That can be much better. You also mentioned, you know, competing with car dealers across the world. I just need to correct you a little bit. Car buying is still fairly localized. In other words, you'd probably get the Hartford area would be sort of one price. If people wanted to reach out, they might want to go to Worcester, might want to go to New York City, because you can buy a car, a brand new car, and a warranty will be honored in your local area. What that means is that you can shop other sort of micro markets, and they vary. They really do vary, and that's one of the reasons that using the Internet can be quite effective, because you can generally and usually solicit price quotes from other dealerships using either the Internet or using the telephone to contact the Internet department. The key here for people listening is to understand that if you walk onto a car lot, it might be difficult to get a car because they want you to test drive it, sit down, check your credit, all of that stuff. But if you're a remote car shopper, in other words, you've already test driven the car, you know what you want, you're really calling just for a price quote. You can do that through the internet department. That's a relatively new advancement, and it really is beneficial to the consumer.
Well, and the reason that I say competing with all over the world is, look, if I know the car that I want, I can take a look at that car, and sometimes I'm getting things in online services, much like Edmunds, that'll show me the exact same car in Houston, Texas. Now, it might cost me a little bit more to get that car up here, but I can actually see if a dealer has that car in Houston, and I might want to consider getting it up to Hartford. Or there's a lot of people selling cars on Craigslist. I know somebody who had a car driven halfway across the country because they bought it on Craigslist. I mean, it is seemingly a much different world with these new shopping techniques.
It is a much different world. The one thing I want to kind of stress is that they don't publicize it. The things that are good for the consumer are sometimes not publicized, but they do exist there. You mentioned Craigslist. Of course, there's Auto Traders. There's eBay Motors. And many of these cars, now, well, we're talking, of course, now about used cars. So say you're searching for maybe a difficult-to-find used car. And, you're in Connecticut. You see it in Texas, you make a deal remotely, you get photographs, you look at the vehicle history report, which could be AutoCheck or Carfax, and then you buy the car and you have it shipped to you in Connecticut. This does happen, and many people are benefiting from it, particularly in the used car market. There's a lot of tools that we didn't used to have. The thing is that what's funny is that not only are car dealers somewhat traditional, but car buyers tend to be somewhat traditional. I tell people about the internet, and they go, "Oh, that sounds really great." Now, when I go to the car dealership, what do I do? And it's like, what I'm telling you is, once you test drive the car, you don't absolutely have to go to the dealership. But there's this kind of safety thing where people go to where the cars are.
If you want to ask a question, 860-275-7266, 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive at WNPR.org. Before I let you go, Philip, I just want to hear from you. What are some of the really hot trends in cars right now? I mean, what are people interested in? What are cars that people are buying right now, end of 2013?
Of course, there's been a lot of interest in electric cars. There's been a huge kind of wave of new technology which is coming into the cars. One of the more interesting cars these days, of course, is the Tesla, which is not only electric, but it's a highly advanced electronic car.
And wicked expensive.
Yeah, absolutely it is. We have one in our long-term testing fleet, and I've driven it from my house in Long Beach to Las Vegas using the quick chargers halfway there. That's kind of a new world, and it's fascinating to me. I love to talk about new technology. Meanwhile, people are buying cars that they need to use day to day. A lot of people are leasing those cars, and the technology is creeping in. In other words, they introduce them at a very high level, at an expensive level, but gradually, each year, they make their way down into average cars. Very quickly, I'll tell you that the Honda Accord, for example, has a device where when you turn on the right turn signal, it actually displays what's in your blind spot in the screen in the center console. So rather than turning to look, of course, you're supposed to turn to look also, but you can see into your blind spot. I mean, it's really amazing. So cameras, radars, the connectivity of iPhones, it's just exploding. So the car itself is really becoming, a computer.
Yeah, I think the last thing we probably need is more reasons to get on our iPhone while we're driving, but maybe we'll save that for another day. Philip Reed is Senior Consumer Advice Editor at Edmunds.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Philip. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Now, when we come back from our break, we'll be joined by Jim Motovalli, who's joined us before to talk about cars, and we want to line up some of your questions at 860-275-7266. John DeSimone is also here. He's owner of Modern Tire in West Hartford. He's going to tell some of the stories about people who bring in their cars to get fixed and maybe some of the things you should look for if you're buying a used car. You can join us, 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. Similarly made, similarly sold. In a motorcade, abandoned when rolled. Cars are cars all over the world. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankowski. After 63 years of production and more than 10 million units sold, the Volkswagen Microbus is being taken off the market in December. Sad news for hippies and for those of you who wanted to get your hands on one for cheap. The 600 last edition models will be double the standard price. Thankfully, though, there are tons of other options for the rest of us. Today, we're talking about what cars are smart to buy and how to get a good deal. And we're hearing some of your stories today.
What would you say the best or worst part of buying a car is?
I don't know, getting a good car.
The best part was they gave us lots of options to, like, go and, like, think about it. However, they made us take the car so that we had to come back.
The sales tax after you got and purchased the car, and then you're like, crud.
Yeah.
The sales tax is an additional, like, $2,000 or something along those lines.
Trying to really find out what the darn thing costs.
And how was the process and experience of doing that?
It depends on the dealership you go to.
It can be a little pushy. But I find that if you push back, they usually will cave, and you can meet in the middle somewhere.
Relatively easy, because I knew the salesman already. He was a friend, so it worked out.
I thought the car was okay, and then I found out the battery was would die.
It was literally an all-day process. I went there in the morning, and it was there right till nighttime.
Those are some voices from West Hartford collected by Corey Breen and Greg Dyson. So what are you looking for in a car? 860-275-7266. Jim Motovalli will be by in just a moment, but I want to bring in John DeSimone, who's owner of Modern Tire in West Hartford. He's been in the business since 1981. He's seen an awful lot of cars in his shop. Hey, John, good to see you, and thanks for coming on to Where We Live.
All right, thanks for the invitation.
So first of all, people are looking for reliable cars. What's changed as far as the sorts of cars that you see in there over and over and over again for service? Are there certain trends in, like, you know, if I had that car, maybe I would be in for a lot of service?
Yes, there's real good cars from my standpoint.
Yeah.
And there's really good cars from the consumer standpoint.
Ah, okay. So the good cars from your standpoint are the ones that are in the shop all the time. What are those cars?
Those cars were, in the old days, the Ford Taurus or the Ford Escort. I could count on those for the whole week.
You liked it when they were selling those Tauruses because you were making money.
They were number one.
So why is that? There's something specific about American cars, maybe American cars of 20 years ago and the American cars of today?
Well, I think the American cars of today, when you were talking about buying cars, most people look for the bells and the whistles and the toys, and they forget the basics. Like, and plus the dealerships, the salespeople, do not explain the car. People will come into me and say, how come I don't have a spare? Well, you bought the car for $30,000. Why are you asking me that? Or they come in and they say, why do I have to buy a run flat tire for $392 when a regular tire is $120? I said, because it's on the car. Did you ask about it? No.
So this is one of the things. These cars are coming with bells and whistles, but people really don't know how to maintain the car after that.
No, they have no clue of what they're going to expect on the aftermarket. And again, I just bought a new car and because I love to listen. And the car salespeople or the delivery people are, the word that I use is kind of clueless. Because nobody asks a question, they don't offer any advice. They show them the iTunes. They show them the iPhone, they show them the Siri, they show them the camera for the left side, the right side, they show them all that. But that's not something that they're going to have to repair.
So the things that are being repaired on cars, I'm sure, are quite different than the things that were being repaired on cars 10 or 15 years ago. Cars are so computerized, they're clearly running more efficiently, and even the cars that aren't as well made seemingly are lasting a little bit longer. What is it you're fixing on cars these days, John?
Well, actually, we've lost the front end of cars. It used to be the tie rods, the idler arm, the pitman arm. It was a package that would run up $200-$300, and you know, people didn't grease them, or they were locked in with no grease fitting, so they would wear out and clunk and clank, and that would be a good size business. Now they use a complete steering rack, which is a power steering fluid running through it with a tie rod that connects to each wheel. That's not going to go bad that quickly. It takes a long period of time.
So when things aren't going bad quickly, that's not great business for you, but people are still bringing in their cars for something. What are the things they're bringing them in for?
Right. They're bringing them in. There's published intervals. There's a 30,000-mile inspection, 40,000-mile, 50,000 miles, all recommended intervals of service. Now, people are thinking in terms of they have to go back to the dealer for that because nobody's capable. My computer is the same computer as the dealer's computer.
So that's something for people to know. If you've got a good garage, at the end of the day, you're going to get the same service there that you will at the dealer, no matter what the dealer tells you, right?
Correct. If there is any difference, the person you're dealing with, if you've known him, he'll tell you that there may be a bulletin. And I'll find it for you.
Before we get to some phone calls, you just said you bought a new car. What'd you buy?
I bought a Lexus.
Nice car.
And you know why I bought it?
Why'd you buy it?
It's a Toyota which is a sound, solid car for repairs. And they put about $2,000 worth of bells and whistles in it. So I got the best of both.
You get the bells and whistles in a car that will run for a long time. I want to bring in Jim Motovalli, who's an author, speaker, journalist who focuses on the environment and green cars, but he writes about cars for the New York Times Wheels blog and also for Car Talk. He joins us from our New Haven studios today. Hey, Jim, good to talk to you again.
Great to be on.
So, you know, John was just talking to us about buying a Lexus, which is a Toyota brand. I mean, before we get into a lot of the things we want to talk to you about, talk about that. What are the brands right now that are making really solid cars that people can count on?
Well, I think, like your guests there are saying, the Japanese companies continue to make probably the most reliable cars on the market, though the American brands have done a whole lot to catch up. And it's worth noting that if you look at the complaints, say, about Fords recently, most of them relate to the infotainment system as opposed to anything mechanical on the cars. And you just look at things like, say, rust proofing. Cars 20 years ago would rust. Today, they virtually don't rust. The engines used to need rebuilding at 60,000 miles. Now people don't even blink at 150,000 miles. So cars generally are more reliable, but if you go by, say, Consumer Reports, which I think is a pretty reliable guide, the Japanese companies still, by and large, top the charts in terms of reliability.
Now, Jim, before we get to some of our phone calls, I have to ask you, you got to our New Haven studio. You were stuck in traffic. I mean, how's your driving experience been just today?
I know. You know, I think I can't believe people even want to buy cars, considering how terrible it is. I was looking at this dead raccoon. I think, is this where we are, you know, in the highway looking at dead raccoons barely moving?
Well, barely moving, of course, with Metro North broken for the next couple of weeks. Maybe a lot of people are going to be driving into New York City and down and along 95. If you want to ask a question of Jim Motovalli, 860-275-7266. Also, if you have a car repair question, John DeSimonis here, owner of Modern Tire in West Hartford. Earlier, Jim, we were talking with Philip from Edmunds about some of the other trends that are happening in cars. You write a lot about electric cars, and we hear about that. I mean, is that still one of the things we need to be looking for people buying this year, or has the electricity somewhat come out of the electric car market right now?
No, I wouldn't say we've unplugged the electric car. In fact, sort of going in line with what the guest from Edmunds was saying, the lease deals on electric cars now happen to be extremely good. Most of them are $199 a month for something like the Nissan Leaf or the Chevy Spark electric car. And some of them are exceptionally good. If you look at, say, the Honda Fit electric vehicle, that is $259 a month, but they throw in a free electric charger for your garage. There's unlimited mileage and no money down. I mean, that kind of deal, it's hard to believe that they can make any money off a deal like that, and they probably aren't. They've been trying to get electric cars to move because the automakers have these mandates, both from states like California and from the federal government, to reach certain economy standards fleet-wide. And the only way they're going to do that is if people actually buy the cars. So right now, it's an incredible buyer's market for electric vehicles in particular.
But we still don't have these charging stations all over the place. We heard years ago that we're going to get them, and they were going to be as frequently found as gas stations, and there just really aren't any in a place like Connecticut. I don't know where they are.
I wouldn't say that, actually. I would say that they're increasing quite a bit. For instance, Connecticut now has two supercharger sites for the Tesla Model S along 95 in Milford and Darien. I think we're the only state that has, outside of California anyway, that has that proliferation of Tesla stations, and the state government's been very behind it. My town of Fairfield now has four public stations. Most of the Whole Foods stores now have plugs, and towns are putting them in.
But come on, Joe, how many people are really driving Teslas around Fairfield County?
I would say there's probably about 30 of them.
Okay, there's about 30 of them. They were all stuck in traffic with you today.
Yeah, yeah. they don't get you out of that.
they can't get around the traffic. 860-275-7266. Your calls and questions in a moment. John, I just have to ask you, how's your world changed? Do you have to work on any electric cars at Modern Tire? Anything come in?
So far, not a lot. The batteries are basically, like the hybrid cars are basically the problem. And my guys are going to classes. It's not come on as quickly as we thought it would, but you know, we're in a computer age now, so my techs have to be totally computer savvy along with the hands, feel, touch of a fixing of a car. So, yeah, two people.
And of course, one of the things we keep hearing, Jim, is you mentioned Toyota before. The Prius, the kind of forerunner of all these other hybrid cars, it's still seen by Consumer Reports as one of the most reliable cars in the market. Here's this brand spanking new technology over the course of the last couple decades, and meanwhile, it seems to be holding up just as well or better than anything else that's on the market.
Also, it's in the top 10 of sales if you look at the most recent sales data, and it has been for quite some time. A lot of people said it was Toyota's folly when the Prius came out in 2000. They'd never make any money out of it. They'd never sell them. The complete opposite has been true. It's one of the most reliable and one of the most bought cars in America today. Let me point out another thing that's interesting about the whole idea of servicing in electric cars. There's not a whole lot of things to service on it. Most of the technology, including the electric motor, is really not going to require periodic service. It's not like it's going to need spark plugs or tune-up or anything like that. And it's not going to need its oil changed. A lot of the things that have to do with servicing vehicles will not actually be done on electric cars. I think it's going to change the service business quite a bit.
I want to get some phone calls here. Sheriff is calling from Hartford. Hi there. You're on Where We Live.
Hello, how you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, what's up?
All right. Hey, listen, I'm in the business, and just wanted to share something because I was listening, and you guys were talking about leasing versus buying. You have a lot of Gen Y buyers. You have a lot of folks that like a new car every couple of years because they change as fast as the smartphones do. And I just wanted to make a comment about leasing. Basically, just think, as silly as may sound, just think of leasing like buying a pie of pizza or buying slices. Your down payment are your forks, your drink, your napkins, and your slices are basically your lease. So leasing is not always bad because the reality of it is safety and technology advances, and people are hooked to the newest thing. That's what America is all about. You know, we want the latest TV, we want the latest cars, we want the latest whatever that benefits you.
Well, and I'll tell you, I was in New York City, Sheriff, and I saw the long, long lines as the new iPhones that aren't really all that much different than the old iPhones. People are waiting for those. I hear what you're saying, but I wonder, Jim Motovalli, I mean, is this really getting people to buy cars in exactly the right way? He makes a point. People want something new and shiny every 3 years, but does it make financial sense for people to lease in some of these ways that the car dealerships are pushing?
I think, at least in terms of the electric vehicles that I've been talking about, I think it's a very good deal for consumers, a 2 or 3 year lease. I also think it's a good way for people to get introduced to the technology. You know, funny, it's another way of happening is that rental companies are now offering electric cars. So if you really want to try it out without committing to 2 or 3 year lease, you can always just rent one. And I think that Hertz and Avis and Enterprise are all now offering electric vehicle rentals, and some of them are even offering the Tesla Model S for $1,500 a day. Seems like rather high, you know?
$1,500 a day. I think that blows my whole budget for my vacation. Let's go to Mary, who's calling from Hartford. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
I have a 190 turbo diesel 1987 Mercedes-Benz. It has 350,000 miles. It's still a really great car. I have sentimental value. I only drive it about 5,000 miles a year. So I'm really looking to repair the body. It is a diesel. It would be great to make it more environmental, but I do have a limited budget. I'm an environmentalist. And I wonder if there's any, how to find the sort of craft or artisan old car repair people. Like, where do you find the good repairmen? And not, I have a really good mechanic, but I'm looking for body work.
Looking for body work, too. So this is interesting. John DeSimone, I mean, people are probably asking about this all the time, and I want to talk about diesel cars like Mary's in a second, too. But these old cars that are still on the road, the problem is you want to keep them going. You want to keep them looking good. It might be rusting a little bit. What do you do?
The rusting part of it, there is a in the Yellow Pages is a classic car repair that has bodywork, painting, and anti-rust. There's not a lot of them, but they do specialize in just that.
Well, what about diesel engines? When somebody comes to you with a diesel engine, what do you say? I mean, we hear this all the time, people driving 350,000 miles on a diesel engine.
The diesel engine is really one of the best things that hit in the beginning, but once again, the thrill of the newness wore off. It's not fun anymore. It's not cutting edge. And then you came up with all the negatives. It smells. It makes a lot of noise. And they can last a real long time. Repair-wise, they were pretty innocent of deep repairs.
Well, so, Jim, diesel's one of the things that's kind of competing with hybrids, and I'm going to just throw it right out there, and I'm going to make a confession. I bought a diesel car just this week. I bought a Jetta TDI. I've been looking at the gas mileage. I've been looking at the style of the car, a lot of things that I like. I've driven Volkswagens before. Do you think right now, Jim, a diesel's a good buy, or did I make a huge mistake?
No, you actually made a very prudent choice there with a VW TDI. Today's diesel is a whole lot cleaner. I think people need to get the whole image of these smoking vehicles out of their mind. You're not going to see a big cloud of blue smoke behind your TDI diesel. And the emissions profile is really almost as good as any gas car on the road. They have huge advantages in terms of the fuel economy, and I'm sure you get over 40 mpg on the highway in your TDI. And I think if you look at the German manufacturers, for a long time they were pushing the idea of diesels as an alternative to hybrids and electric cars. And they've deplored the fact that Americans, the take-up of diesels is pretty low. That's changing a bit. If you look at some of the VW lines, maybe 20-30% of the sales are diesel, which is actually fairly good. But Americans are still resistant to diesel, certainly in comparison to Europeans. Or in countries like France, half the cars on the road or more are diesel. In the U.S., it's still a very small part of the market. But I do think a diesel is worth considering. If you look at the fuel economy, it's a little hard to compare because with electric cars, you don't have miles per gallon. But we do have mile per gallon equivalent ratings for most of the cars, so you can compare them that way. And if the fuel economy rating of the diesel is about the same as the electric car, then it's worth considering. I don't think you should buy a hybrid or an electric car just because it's bragging rights with your neighbors. I think you should really look at what you're getting, compare all the different factors, and sometimes diesels will come out on top. One great advantage of them is range. Diesels will sometimes go 600 or 700 miles on a tank. I think that's a really great thing. I hate stopping for gas.
It's just, yeah, it's one of those convenience things. I don't want to stop as much. Quickly, Jim, you know, Mary was hinting at something else with her old Mercedes-Benz with 350,000 miles, making it more even environmentally friendly. You know, moving forward, are there going to be more diesel engines that are running on biodiesel or different types of fuel? Can you tune up these cars to actually make them run on something that, I don't know, somebody might be selling in a couple of years here in Connecticut?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, just about any diesel can run on like a 15% blend of biodiesel, but they can be easily modified to run on 100% salad oil or something like that. I know plenty of people that run old Mercedes, and they're running them basically on old fryer oil from McDonald's or the Burger King. You can definitely do that. It's not a huge fix. It's a $300 or $400 modification to your engine, basically to heat up the oil, because everyone knows that oil will congeal at room temperature or when it's colder. So you need something to warm that up so the engine can run on it.
You don't want that nasty oil clogging up your system.
Let me just say about that woman who called about the Mercedes. If your car has 350,000 miles on it and it's severely rusted, I really don't think that's economic to get that fixed. It really depends on the extent of the body damage to really know whether that's the right thing to do or not.
One more quick phone call before our break. Veronica's out on Long Island. Hi, Veronica. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm calling because I'm purchasing a used car for my son. Well, we are purchasing for him. And a previous vehicle that was in an accident, when I originally purchased it and ran the Carfax, it didn't indicate any accidents. When the insurance ran on their system, whatever system they use, they found several accidents. So how do I ensure when I'm purchasing a used car that it hasn't been in accidents that aren't showing on the Carfax?
Boy, great question, Veronica. Jim, what can you tell her here?
Well, I would say if the Carfax failed to turn up some significant accidents that this car had, then there's not much point to it. That's what it's supposed to do. That's why you buy it, so you know the real history of the car. Certainly, that's the concept of Carfax, but I don't know why it wouldn't have shown up those accidents, because I think generally and pretty reliably it does that. But you do really want to worry about cars having previous accident histories. And one way to do that is just to have somebody knowledgeable look at it, because you can tell by paint variations and the way the doors fit and the trim lines. You can really tell whether a car's been in an accident by visual inspection. Not always. But then there's other things we have to worry about these days, such as whether your car has been flooded by Hurricane Sandy.
Well, I wanted to bring that up. Like that's huge, right? I mean, in this area, there's a lot of cars underwater. Is.
Yeah, and people think, okay, it was wet, it dried out, it's fine now. But actually, that car will never be right. It may look fine, you won't notice anything looking at it, but the wiring's all been compromised. And it's like I ruined my cell phone snorkeling on the Big Island of Hawaii. And even if that thing dried out and started working again, it would not be the same phone. And the same thing's true for your car.
Yeah. Well, and John, do you have people bringing you cars sort of saying, I don't know what's wrong with this. You know, is this a car I should buy? And you try to do this forensic research and figure out how it's been injured in the past?
Yeah, we do. But, you know, to allay their fears, as long as the frame and the front end is not out of position, it's not diamond. As far as the paint being a little different than normal, that should not make a big deal. In the next part of that safety, the inspection for used cars, most of the time we won't charge our customer because we want to let them know that we're on the same page as they are. But you can't get in. I can't miniaturize my guys to put them through the engine to tell you how good it is. Okay? I can't go through the transmission to tell you that. And there are no such things as fixing a transmission, you change it into a rebuilt transmission. But the cars that have been in floods, the perfect example is Atlantic City. They just had that big fire, that water, and they just told you that the electrical wires were compromised. And that's going to continue to come up.
Yeah.
But as far as finding it, if Carfax doesn't report it, some people just don't report a fender bender, which, you know, is not going to hurt the car's drivability.
If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. When we come back from our break, we'll get to a lot more phone calls as we're talking about buying a used car or a new car, trends in the car market. John DeSimone is here from Modern Tire in West Hartford. Jim Motovalli is here. He's a blogger for Wheels Blog at New York Times and also Car Talk. We'll leave you here with an email from Chris as a lifelong, albeit presently carless gearhead. I value efficiency, versatility, and serviceability in a car. I prefer manual transmissions and diesel engines, so the sort of cars I like are much more common everywhere, but North America. If I can't do the basic maintenance and routine repairs myself, I don't want it. I view every fancy gadget as a potential source of problems down the road. We'll be right back where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on Monday's show, we're going to present a very special report from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX called Reveal. It's about the skyrocketing number of opiate prescriptions in veterans' facilities, veterans becoming addicts with the help of the VA. We'll have online resources at WNPR.org. That story and other investigative stories as we present this special report from PRX and CIR coming up on Mondays, Where We Live. I hope you can join us. Today, we're talking about cars. A lot of people are buying new cars and used cars right now, and we're talking with a few folks who know a little bit about vehicles. Jim Motovalli is an author, speaker, journalist who focuses on the environment and green cars, but he also blogs about cars in general for New York Times Wheels Blog and also for Car Talk. John DeSimone is here. He's owner of Modern Tire in West Hartford. They've been in the business since 1981, and they see a lot of the cars when they get broken. So let's go to Mario in West Hartford, get some more phone calls in here. Hi, Mario. You're on Where We Live.
How are you, John? My question is related to consumer protection. I am an insurance agent. I'm licensed. If your an insurance station and you do something wrong, client can report you to the Department of Insurance. Same for realtors, brokers, but how about dealerships? I get to see some purchase and sales agreements that include a lot of things the client may or may not need. So what do they do?
Boy, this is a great question, Mario. Jim, what do you think about this? Yeah, and I know John DeSimone might want to jump in here, too. What do you say to Mario?
I'm not sure I totally understood the question, but he's saying that dealers slip in things that you don't really need.
Well, I think what he's saying is that if you're a realtor, if you're in a lot of other businesses, you're regulated in a different way, and dealers at car dealerships are often slipping in things that you're maybe, are maybe hidden from you that aren't being regulated, that no one's overseeing.
Yeah, I think that's true, and that's why the car salesman has occasionally reputation as a slippery customer because of that. And there's a lot of things, scotch guarding and undercoating and dumb things they put on the car and mark up. And I think you have to be very careful about what you're paying for and what you don't want and try to get them to take things off the bill. And another thing about buying a car is there's a lot of wiggle room. There's a lot of room for negotiation. And I think Americans, maybe more than other people, are really not used to haggling over things. But you really need to do that when you buy a car. You need to say, I'll buy this car if you do this. And I personally do this all the time when I buy things. And I find it very effective, even though our culture isn't, we don't live in the Middle East, so it's not all a haggling culture. But I do think you can bargain. It's a buyer's market, so you can go in there and you've got the power, and they want you to make the deal, and they want to move the car out. They got the new ones coming in, so don't just take the first deal that you get offered, and also look at the invoice, what they're putting on there, how they're padding the bill. And there's probably some things you can get taken off. You really don't have to pay for the undercoating and the scotch guarding and useless.
What's this, John?
It's called undercoat and luster seal.
Undercoat and luster seal.
Useless. Cars aren't going to rust without that. You don't need that.
So you're basically saying, John, do you ever have people come in and ask about their scotch guarding, their under seal?
No, they just don't even, when they find out what it was, they don't talk about it. Because that's that makes them uneducated.
Yeah.
But they do commit to, why did I get run flat tires that nobody told me about? And they didn't tell me how expensive they were. And nobody told me they didn't have a spare. And nobody told me that they told me I could only go 50 miles on my dummy spare or phony spare when it says do not exceed 55 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So, you say if you're on the Trans-Canadian Highway, do you think that they would give you a tire that's only going to go 50 miles?
The funny thing is the reason automakers have gone to taking the spare out is that it adds weight, and they're in a desperate march to try to increase the fuel economy of the car so they can meet federal standards. And the fuel, the spare tire was just a lot of weight they're carrying around that maybe sacrificed 1 mpg. So we're really seeing a move to no spare and these sort of inflation kits that almost never work. It's terrible. It's a bad trend.
Well, one of the trends, though, that has happened with the spares coming out is a lot of places are offering this roadside assistance, or, of course, you can get triple. At the end of the day, I don't think the state police or almost anybody wants you trying to change a tire at the side of the road with the way people are driving and all the dead raccoons like you saw today, Jim. It just seems as though maybe calling somebody else to do that might be a good idea. Eric is calling from Summers. Hey, Eric, go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Yes, this is Eric calling from Summers, a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Thank you so much.
I'm kind of an odd duck in this as I repair my own automobile. So I mainly drive BMWs. And, for example, my last repair, and actually my current repair, is a valley fan replacement and intake seal reseal. But while I was at the local BMW dealership in Western Massachusetts picking up parts, they said that BMW has a new electric vehicle coming out, the i3. And I'm interested in it because I I commute to Boston once a week. And while the 540 that I drive is, fuel efficient enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an M5 by any means. I'm looking at the electric car as an option, and they said that the car is capable of driving 100 miles.
Well, let me put that to Jim real quick, because we're going to run low on time here. Jim, do you know anything about this car?
Oh, yeah. I was at the debut of it just about a month ago. Yes, the i3 is coming out. I think it's next year. We're going to see it in the U.S. It does have a 100-mile range, but you can get it with a range extender that'll make it 200 miles. It's like a little gas engine. It sort of makes it into a hybrid, but not quite, because the gas engine doesn't drive the wheels. It just generates electricity to give you more range. But it's going to be in the range of about $45,000. It's going to be an expensive car. It's very cool looking, very innovative. It has a carbon fiber body, lots of unusual features, a real step forward for BMW. They're also coming out with the i8, which is a very high-performance plug-in hybrid, probably another year or so down the road. And it's, like I say, it's a big move into electricity for BMW, and the European makers haven't really done a whole lot with it yet, but we're seeing the transition now.
Well, and we're just about out of time, Jim, but I have to ask, you mentioned like the high price on some of these new hybrids or these electric cars. Are we just really paying too much for cars right now? I mean, should we be trying to purchase cars that's a little bit cheaper? And are we getting what we're paying for when we're paying, you know, $35,000, $40,000 for a vehicle?
I think people really should look at the low end of the market, because what you get in a $15,000 car, to me, is a pretty good deal compared to what you get in a $40,000 car. And if you look, say, at the hybrids and electrics, particularly the electrics, right now, they probably are a good deal in the sense that the automakers are losing money at the prices they charge for them. Batteries are still very expensive. The technology that goes in an electric vehicle is a big expense. You know, the battery in an EV can be $20,000 or something like that. So the profit margin is just not there at this point. So the consumer benefits in that way. The prices are quite reasonable considering the cost of building them, I would say.
We got one email quickly, Jim. People worried maybe about a Prius in the snow. Some of these hybrid vehicles, are they going to get you through these tough New England winters?
I think so. I think they've done very well in the winter. I think they've adopted those conditions. They certainly have snow tires for them. I don't think you should worry about hybrids in the snow.
Let's go to Andy in stores. Andy, last 30 seconds here. Go ahead.
Yes, I know nothing about cars. Is there someone or some site that I can hire to do the work for me?
To go purchase a car? Boy, there's a lot of places to go shop online. It's almost, Jim Motivall, I give him some ideas, but there's almost too much information out there from my standpoint.
Well, I certainly recommend people go to cartalk.com, which is in the NPR family, or Consumer Reports has quite a lot of information.
There's a few more that we've looked at, and there's so many different places. One thing I think you have to look for, Jim, is that there are some of these sites that seem to be both giving you advice about cars and also trying to sell you cars at the same time. And I think that's something that you might want to worry about if you're buying a car right now, right?
Yeah, and I think you do have to look at, you know, who funds the site. And I think that's one of the advantages of Consumer Reports, is they don't take any sponsorship or advertising money. So it's fairly pure advice.
If you were buying a car right now, Jim Motivalli, what would you buy?
Oh, I'd probably buy a Honda Civic or a Toyota Corolla. It's nothing very exciting. You know, I drive exciting cars all the time. If buying one, I'd probably buy something pretty boring.
Oh, yes, sir. And John DeSimone, we know what you'd buy. You're going to buy an Acura, something that's going to go on the road for a long time, right?
Yeah, I'd buy one with the new bells and whistles because they won't go bad.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because I'm in the business.
You're in the business, right? You know how to fix a car, right? And you're in the business.
But if I were to buy a car from people ask me about their kids going to school, I tell them point blank, a used Toyota, a used Honda, best buys on the market. Even if you pay a little bit more, it's worth, you get more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
And it's safe.
John DeSimone, owner of Modern Tire in West Hartford. Good to see you, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks also to Jim Motivalli, who writes for the New York Times Wheels blog and also for this show, Car Talk. Hey, Jim, thanks so much.
Great to be on.
Thanks to producer Lori Mack, who helped us today in our New Haven studio. Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Betsy Kaplan. The senior producer is Katie Talarski. Happy car shopping. I'm John Dankosky. This is Where We Live.